Flight Entertainment's Filmmakers Lounge. And this week we have a very special, special guest, a brother I hold near and dear to my heart. I met this brother in Columbia College, Hollywood. We still do have the same passion for storytelling. We kick each other in the butt, far as, you know, trying to push each other to keep telling stories, challenge the medium, and tell some special things that will resonate with everyone. And I think this brother have done an amazing job throughout his body of work. He's keeping it going. You know, he's keeping it live. And I want to introduce everyone that don't know his name. Hear his name. Juan Johnson. Mo Faye Bo. What up, brother?
What's up, man?
What's up, brother? You're good, man. I'm good, man. I mean, like I said, I had to get you on. You know, due to numerous conversations, okay, me and LaJuan, we text each other every now and again, and LaJuan is always, he's the Phil Jackson of people in the circle you want to have in your life, in a sense of, he'll text you, all right, what you working on? You know, what you writing? What you doing? Yeah, like even when I'm kind of like, oh no, like, all right, you got to make something this year, man. Like, let's go. So he's the coach, you know, he put the fire up under me and he keep me going. So, and I really appreciate that over the years of our friendship. But yeah, man, so what's going on, man? Tell the world about yourself.
I don't know what to say. I mean, yeah, I've always enjoyed telling stories, and I think that's, you know, it's a great sense of therapy and escape, and it's a drug. I've always wanted to do that, and I, you know, just with learning experiences to be able to put it in an art form like cinema, it's really special, man. So what is known about me that people don't already know? We met at Columbia College, Hollywood. We were just big-eyed and motivated people ready to go and change the world with cinema, and we learned a lot. And we were young. We were young thinkers, and we were really motivated. And the world was ahead of us. And now, you know, some time later, we're in the world and getting a chance to see how things really are. And it's just really special. And I think that life in general kind of helps with your ability to tell stories and your ability to be able to change things. That's pretty much about me, man. I'm just a guy that, you know, lives life and experience a lot of different things and trying to take it all and transform it into cinema.
Well, right on, brother. Hey, you do it well. You do it well, brother. Now, what inspired you to pursue filmmaking? Well, okay. Well, let's rewind it back for a little bit. Now, like, tell us a little bit about, you know, your origin, so to speak. Like, you know, what was the point in your life that you just grasped the medium, like, okay, this is it, this is what I'm gonna, you know, put my blood, sweat, and tears into?
Well, I don't know when it was a particular moment. I do know that growing up, I think one of the biggest factors I think that molded me into the person that I am was to be able to develop an imagination. And what I mean by that is that playing with toys, you know, having action figures and making up stories and, you know, and playing with the toys. And because I was you know, kind of more of a loner. And as a kid that, you know, I played by myself, I was able to have an imagination and tell stories with my action figures. And then my grandmother and my great uncle, they both were involved with the American Ballet Theater. And so they used to take me to performances, and I was always in awe, not of the ballet dancers, but I was in awe of the people that were working behind the curtain. And you know, and I just thought it was always really cool. So how to incorporate understanding that there's a whole world that's the audience is watching a performance, and while the performance is taking place, you have all this chaos and craziness going on in the background. And I was more interested in what was going on in the background than what the people were saying. So it's almost like equivalent to like an iceberg. You take, you know, you see the small part of the iceberg above the ocean, but you see the massiveness of the iceberg under. And I was always interested in that. So I think that's where those origins kind of molded me into wanting to do cinema.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't even know that. Yeah, we learned new stuff tonight. Yeah, right on. So, all right, get that down, right? So what, and I always like talking to my fellow filmmakers about this, because everyone have different entry points. What's the creative fuel, so to speak, when there's something that just tugs at you, that tells you, okay, you have to see this story or this particular premise out because this is going to be something? Like, what... like, how do you sift through it? How do you sift through the maybes to get that, okay, I'm getting it?
I think that, and that's a heavy question, because, you know, I think everybody works differently. I think that now that, you know, you have time, when you become older, you begin to think, one of the driving forces, I think, to wanting to tell a story is you have to define what you have to make clear what your definition of success is. You have to be able to define what that is, and you need to be realistic. But I think the most important thing is you have to define it. So if your reality is, I want to be rich, I want to be a world famous filmmaker, I want to be, you know, popular like Quentin Tarantino or Martin Scorsese, or, you know, then those are okay. You've set a standard, but are you prepared for a backup plan? And are you prepared to be disappointed if that doesn't happen? I don't think there's any filmmaker that's worth their grit doesn't think about being the big top filmmaker of the world. And so I think that what you have to do is you have to define what success is. And then when you get to the writing, if you are a writer or a producer or a director, you have to be able to be okay with the product that you're putting together based off of what you feel is your definition of success. Now, unfortunately, we put our success level so high that anything less than that we deem as a disappointment. And so the problem with that is, like, you know, for instance, you take a young filmmaker and they say, okay, I'm writing a script with the goal of going to Sundance. And then they get a producer and they raise money, or, you know, or they shoot it themselves with the goal of going to Sundance, and they make the movie and it's special with the goal of getting to Sundance. And then they submit to Sundance and Sundance says no. And so the whole journey in a way has been lost according to that person, because their defining definition of success was to go to Sundance. So I think that, and that happens to all of us. I think what we have to do is start to change our thinking and say, okay, what are we okay with? So when it comes down to the drive is, okay, what do I want to do? Do I want to tell a story because I love the art of cinema and I just want to tell a story, and all I care about is the movie being done and be able to show it to one or two people? If that's your success and you're able to do it, then you do it and you're successful. I think that the problem is in this world of art, we've made it into such a business to where we're thinking of everything other than the art of telling a story. We start focusing on all these other these other things that are not guaranteed. The only thing that's guaranteed is your ability to do art and direct a film and write a script. And one of the things that was taught to me was, you know, when you put a seed into the ground, with the goal of having this apple tree, right? Mm-hmm. So you can eat its fruit. So you water the ground every single day, and then, you know, you get bored and you wait until that sprout comes out, and then you're excited and you're happy. And then eventually, if you could take someone's life and expand it to 100 years, you'll end up getting an apple tree and you can go to eat its fruit. Well, that, and so you say, okay, it was all worth it. Well, what happens if the sprout never comes? I think that what happens is you have to be okay and enjoy the art of watering the ground that you put the seed in. So if you're okay with that and you can say, you know, hey, I'm loving this, then I think that you'll be really surprised about the success that you're able to accomplish. But you have to be okay with watering the ground. And no matter what happens, everything else will be icing on the cake, but you love where you're at. And I think that's the biggest thing about success, is being okay with where you're at. So to answer your question, I think the driving factor of getting a script done and you know, shooting a movie and working with actors and getting it to the festivals, I think that all of these things have particular goals. In my situation, my drive is to finish the script. Mm. And then that's satisfying to me for step one. Step two is shooting the movie. Mm-hmm. And that's a big step. And so the drive for that is to get the movie shot. Now it's in the can. Now I have a whole nother problem. It's, does the movie work in the editing room? And then so we edit it really fast and we put it together, and then we can see the movie and say, okay, it works. Okay, then now we're good. And so I take my levels of drive based off of those steps, right? Mm-hmm. Coming up with the idea, writing it, shooting it, and then cutting it. And then after that, it's like, okay, we were able to accomplish. But I don't think anything past that, because I never want to open up the door to be disappointed, to say, okay, the hard work that I put in has earned the right to be seen by millions of people. I'm not the judge of that. I'm okay with having my movie done and just enjoying the process of that. So,
right. Yeah. And you're right. It's you know, you put your heart into that project, you know, make it as genuine and make it as much as you, as far as your DNA into that story and that project. And I know I'm a firm believer is if you genuinely putting your best foot forward into said project, it finds its audience, so to speak, or the accolades come in because people who really see or search for a genuine experience, far as storytelling, far as acting, things like that, it will find them. And then, like you said, just like with the apple tree, then it sprouts out like, oh, I seen this independent movie is amazing. You have to watch, you know. But if it wasn't genuine, if it wasn't something pure, like far as the intentions of getting that story crafted, you know, it's transparent, right? Like you could see saccharin from, you know, like the original stuff, right? But right. I think what I really respect about your the projects you've, you know, have gave to the world is your DNA's in it. There's no superficial like elements in, like, when you tell a story or when you make this decision to make something, okay, he wanted to say something. That's because this project is out. That's why this movie that's made by, you know, you is in the world today, because like it was something, I don't know, that you couldn't shake, that you had to say in the language of cinema. And that's why I always respected, you know, and, you know, still do to this day, you know, the projects you choose to, you know, bring out and, you know, have out, you know, for people to, you know, look at, absorb, and quite frankly, be enlightened by.
I appreciate that. I mean, the thing about it is that, you know, you have to have yourself in your films. And I will say that every film that I've done, there is a piece of me in it. As you say, the DNA. I think one of the hardest things in the world is to do a film that you're not personally and emotionally attached to. You know, I mean, then it becomes a job. Then it becomes, you know, it doesn't become, it's not an art anymore, you know? And I think that the one thing that I take great pride in my films is that it's Luan. And just as much as, you know, some of them are very different. Some of them are different from others. Like, you know, they're different styles. They're different ways. I mean, you can look at one film and then look at another and say, OK, is this done by the same filmmaker? I think some people will say, OK, yeah, I could see that. But then there are some differences. And I think that that's because that's who we are. We're happy until we're sad. We're joyful until we're angry. We there's a lot of stuff about us as people that there's other sides of us. And I think that what I'm trying to do with cinema is tell parts of me that are not necessarily known by others. And it gives me an opportunity to put myself into it. And I've had a couple of films that I've done where people say, man, were you angry? Because it's such a sad film. Or, no, I'm not angry at all. I had fun. It was nice, but it was reality. And I think that one of the things that, you know, we have to do is we have to make it very personal. It's so important. It's so important that we do that.
Yeah. It's definitely experiences that, you know, that, okay, like this is coming from a genuine place, like, you know, yeah. So therefore it commands your attention and it commands your respect, which okay. So, all right. Well, just give all this backstory with us. So Luan, the Avengers Assemble moment is when Luan was working on this short film called Every Morning I Kiss the Sun, right? It was one of those Avengers Assemble moments where within Luan's project, we all just like, okay, like what we need to do, like let's get it in, let's do this, like what, because, you know, the story was so poignant and powerful. And okay, I'm gonna give people a little insight on Luan. Luan has a way of making sure that everyone that's in the movie, in front of the camera, behind the camera, is equally important. Like, he knows how to get everyone that's in the room and have everybody like, okay, like, you got this. It's all you, man. You're gonna make it's gonna be brilliant. And, you know, like he's the ultimate captain to keep your spirits up. You know, even if you like just sitting on the set all day, you still feel like, you know, you're the most awesome person sitting on the set throughout the whole shoot. But he have a really genuinely great, I guess, captain's attitude of, and Luan can tell you that's a gift in itself, because when you're wrangling, you know, people behind the cameras and you're trying to get the best performances out of actors and you're trying to, you know, frame up that shot right with your, you know, DP and things that, you know, for Every Morning to Come Out How It Came Out, it was an accomplishment. And all of us, it just felt like we gave birth to this awesome newborn, like, It was a wise joint, but we all felt like it was our baby too, because he was that inclusive with everyone that, you know, we all felt great about it equally, you know, even though it was his joint. So, I gotta watch your call on that one for a little bit. But that being said, tell us, and I talked to the filmmakers about this. This is another question, like with you. So getting into like the actor situation, like of course all directors have their methods of getting performances out the actors the way they want. Of course, that's something in itself. But tell us a little bit about your process, your method when you bring on, let's say, actors that you don't really know too much about, that's just newly into the fold. Like, how do you, you know, establish that understanding and trust, so to speak?
Well, I think that, I mean, it's not a, I don't think that there's necessarily a step-by-step formula. I think that when it comes down to, well, in particular with every morning, you know, it was just, it was able to work out to where we had, you know, people that wanted to be there. And as far as the actors are concerned, they wanted to be there. They wanted to be a part. And one of the things that I loved about every morning is that we were indeed a family. I mean, you know, even though that movie was shot 4 days, and not even a full 4 days, like 3.5 days, it felt like we were together forever. And it was special, because it was back to the original love of telling stories. And you say, you know, this is Luan's joint, but I felt like, and I always felt this way about that film, that it was our movie. And I remember when you were putting together the credits, I don't know if you heard this. I don't know if, you know, you had already done the credits. Mm-hmm. And I said, Sylvia, I think that we should have the film be a film by us and not a film by Luan Johnson. And
yeah,
and she's like, well, you've already did the credits. I was like, okay, we're not going to, you know, but what I'm saying is, I think that when it comes down to actors, I think that the one thing that I don't know if it's still happening now. We had actors that were enthusiastic about their careers, excited about their careers, and willing to go the extra mile. And I think that was easy to do. What I do is I try, when it comes down to actors, is because they're not going to see me on screen. The audience is going to see the performance. And so I need the actors to be satisfied with their performance. And satisfied with what they're putting out, because their names are going to be on it. And I, in a very gentle way, remind them about that, that it's on you. You're in 100% control. And so that's why I allow the actress to have some say. I allow the actress to have an opinion about the matter. And like I said, it, every morning it lucked out with some of my films. It lucked out beautifully. And, you know, there was a couple of films where it didn't work out at all. I mean, it didn't work out at all as far as from the actor's perspective, because, you know, because they had their own motive. I think that every morning and some of my other films later, they, even though they're appreciated as actors, they're so appreciated as actors, I never wanted them, and I want them to know that the project is bigger than them. That it's about the entire piece, and you are a part of that piece, and your part is so important. But at the same time, the bigger picture is the story. And I think that with one film that you edited for me before every morning, we did have an actress that despised the film. But what was really funny is that she despised the film that we did, But eventually what happened was, what I later came to find out, is that that film actually got her representation. And she later told me, thank you so much. The film is amazing. Like almost 10 years later. And it's like,
wow. Okay.
You know what I mean? So it was just really funny. But but what I'm saying is, I think you have to have actors that are not thinking, they're thinking about their craft, but they're not thinking about their celebrity. They're not thinking about their, you know, this is going to be my calling card. Think of it as putting, you know, showing your work, showing your ability to take direction, showing your ability to perform. And like I said, for the most part, it's worked out very, very well. And I also have failed in some of these situations, but tried to also maintain a relationship with actors, even before, during, and even after we make the film, to try to maintain that. Now, I haven't done that in the best of situations in some cases, but I enjoy having relationships with the actors afterwards, even if it's on a phone call or a text message, simply because we made a film together and it's our film and it's something that I'm an honor to share with them. So they're not just pawns on the board. They are indeed key members of the entire project for me. So
yeah, and that goes a long way, man, because there were times when I, you know, when I work with, you know, actors on my projects, and they're sometimes they are in shock almost, because, you know, they tiptoe after I finish filming and everything, and I'm editing it. Like, it was one situation where one of the actors, they were like, yeah, sorry to bother you. You know, I wonder, it's okay if you say no, it's fine. I'm like, what you want? Like, it's gonna be a yes. What? Well, is it okay if I could like just have maybe like 15 seconds of this scene for my reel? I mean, like, she was like petrified to ask. I'm like, I give you the whole scene. Like, don't worry about it. I got you. Like you want it compressed? What you want? Like, I got you. Well, yeah. Yeah. She went on to say there are so many horror stories with like filmmakers that she worked with that just wouldn't like let her see footage, wouldn't let her get footage for her reel. She never seen the finished products for some of the stuff that she's done. So, and she was like, wow, like, thank you so much, because there's a lot of people I work with that's quote unquote directors that I still to this day haven't seen anything I've done. I was like, wow. Yeah. So I'm like,
if you remember, I mean, and I understand that's coming from, okay. what's funny about what you're saying is, and because I've heard the same stories too, and I think that with every morning, I don't remember fully, but I believe with every morning, I showed the actors dailies. I showed them what we were shooting. I showed them what we had, because number one, I was excited about the footage and how it looks. But number two, again, I just, you know, they were there. I'm not going to tell them that they can't see it. Now, granted, there's been some cases where, I didn't like that take, but we have to move on. But the thing is, I think that what's sad about the situation, and this is something that has happened to me in a lot of cases, is that, you know, when you have a film student, you know, we were film students at one point, and you have these film students that are holding auditions and they want to see your headshot. They want to see your resume. I always had a problem with looking at people's resumes, because if they ask me to look at my resume, what do I have on my resume? So it's almost like a situation like, yeah, you want to see their resume to see what they've done, to see, okay, can they do this? Can they do that? But for me, it was never a determining factor to say, okay, we're going to pick this person because they have a resume, and then because they have a lot of credits. The way I feel about it is that, you know, some of these people need the opportunity to go out and do things, and if they're motivated and they're excited and they're looking forward to doing it and they're willing to do the project, then to me that's already like a huge step of into the right direction. But, you know, when it comes down to, well, let me see your resume, it's not good enough. And I say, well, as a filmmaker, what have you done? You've done, you know, you did a couple of film exercises in a film class, but you've never shot a film before, mm-hmm. but you're holding this actor to their resume, and this actor's looking at you, probably knows cinema better than you do, and you're directing it. So I think that when it comes down to these actors, they're so underappreciated, mm-hmm. and they're not considered. Like I said, I've had people ask me for footage, and sometimes I tell them, you know, hey, I can give you this, but I can't give you the whole film just yet because we're being considered for festivals or whatever, but it's never been an issue about giving the movie the footage and using whatever they need, you know, whatever they want. You know, we've had people use monologues that I've written for them, like, oh, use it for auditions and get, you know, and that's cool. You know, like I said, they're the ones that have to perform it. And so, and a director can't do anything without the actors. So why are we being so dismissive to them?
Yeah. Trying to be the gatekeeper. I know it's the filmmaker's project, but ultimately you have to take into consideration that people, actors and all the other people that decided to be a part of your project is doing just that, being a part of your project. And I think it's a bit disrespectful if you turn around and be this gatekeeper that just don't want to, like, you know, be accommodating to any kind of request whatsoever. Like you were saying, like, if it's within the scope of, you know, doing something for your crew or actors, like, what's the problem? You know, right. It's like, no, I can't get, you're not getting the whole movie, but if you need like this, you know, 30-second little clip of your performance, for your reel, go ahead, do your thing, put that on your reel.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just wanted to kind of like get your sage wisdom on that one.
and like I said, it's tough now with actors. Now I don't know, because I'm not in the film school world anymore. But it just seems like it's been tougher to get actors that are willing to go on these journeys with you as an independent filmmaker. I think that, you know, you look at the and some of it's justifiable. You know, people have to pay bills. People have, you know, homes. They have, you know, they have rent they have to pay, and so they need to be paid, and I completely respect that. I just don't remember it being this challenging in the last few years of doing, even small paid jobs. It's like, you know, it's just not, you know, I don't know. I mean, it just seems a lot different now, you know, mm-hmm. than what it was, you know, even 10 years ago. It's a lot different. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but maybe because I'm not in LA, maybe that's the reason. I don't know, but it just seems a lot different.
It's different. Yeah, I can tell you from being still in LA, it's definitely changed. It's a shift. It's definitely a shift. Yeah. Okay. So you have, is Song still available?
No, it's not. It's not on Prime anymore. I need to get going with that, and probably put it back on. See about putting it back on Prime right along with another film. I want to put both of those back. I want to put it back on Prime. I actually just did it. I attempted to transfer the film and put it into 4K. So I was like, man, you know, and I got a chance to, you know, I got a chance to watch the film again, which I haven't seen in a long time, but got a chance to watch Songs again. And said, man, this was really special. It was a really special film. So it's one of those. Every film has a near and dear place to my heart, and, you know, and so it was like, okay, you know, that one, you know, it would be nice to put it back on Prime again. But it did about almost a 3-year run on Prime. So, so I was like, you know, they said, oh, our time is up. And so I probably would have to change the title, and maybe, you know, but, and put it right back out there again. And, you know, probably with a different, with a 4K feel in it. And, maybe even put a couple extra scenes in there that we didn't use. So,
yeah. Cause just imagine the disappointment on this person's face. Well, I was like, well, let me go check, watch Souls again before I talk to Mo. Ain't on it.
I'm sorry, man. Like I said, they messaged us and said, you know, hey, we're going to go ahead and stop, you know, the time, you know, time is up for it. And I said, oh, okay. And so, you know, with Prime, it's funny with all these streaming services, everything has, you know, unless you're a big, big, big movie. And even then, those movies stay on for a certain amount of time and they're gone. So, yeah. So someone made the suggestion that I should probably do Larry Clark does now. He makes his movies and he sells them on his website. And so I was like, we'll see. Like I said, I'm not really big on trying to sell anything. Like you could watch a movie for free. You know, it's just so I'll have to get songs put back on there right along with Ken.
Ken, okay, yes, yeah, that was my follow up question. Was Ken? Yes. All right, so. Like you were saying a little while back, how one film is different from the other. Now, Ken in Songs is a prime example of the feel, tone. Yeah, definitely. What is not like the other? With Ken, that's the latest release, right? Okay, so I was blessed to be a part of a screening. It was a virtual screening that Lamont was gracious enough to invite me to, and I watched his release, Ken, and Ken hit me like a ton of bricks because of the subject matter. I just leave it at that, but like tell us more about that project.
Ken I got into the, you know, there's certain things in my life that I'm realizing now that I'm getting older that truly affected me. That didn't affect me before. So for people that are interested, I mean, Ken is basically a story of a gentleman meeting another guy, and he comes to find out that they're brothers and of the same father, and that that their father had passed away, and he wanted his two sons to scatter his ashes in a desert. And so the movie, it's a little bit different as far as the structure of it goes. It's about these two men having a conversation, one trying to convince that his father is a good man, and the other one, who never knew his father, trying to understand why he cares. And so that's the movie Ken. This was 100%, a labor of love on my part. And what's really funny is I need you guys out there that are listening to understand that I remember Yusuf and I were at the Laughlin Film Festival.
Rest in peace, Laughlin.
Laughlin, yes, Laughlin Film Festival. Oh man, well, we were at this Laughlin Film Festival, and I told him about this project, and it wasn't even written. And he said, "You got to make this movie," and he kept talking about it. And so, eventually, we were able to do it. But basically, what the movie is about is that's what the movie's about, and it's dealing with two black men having a conversation. It's hugely inspired by the movie My Dinner with Andre, which is, you know, two white gentlemen that are having a conversation in a restaurant. The whole movie takes place inside of a restaurant. We didn't do that, but we definitely kept it to where these two men are having a conversation. And what was special about this movie is because it's two intelligent black men having a conversation. So what I experienced in my life is, you know, like sitting down talking with you, Yusuf, like two intelligent, educated black men having a conversation. And others, you know, whether it's in the barbershop or whatever, the one thing that was special about this film was that it wasn't about two athletes. It wasn't about two drug dealers. It wasn't about two people in the music business. It was just two regular guys having a conversation. I think that's something that is not celebrated in media today. It's certainly not celebrated in cinema. And they talk about subject matters that I talk about with people all the time, whether interracial relationships to Black Lives Matter. It kind of covered a lot of different type of things. And I really wanted to do that. So it was a labor of love. If anyone ever watches this movie, it is, and I'll tell you the secret that a filmmaker probably wouldn't tell, but I don't mind sharing it. If you actually watch the movie and you listen to the conversations, all of it is my life, 100%, from different perspectives, different times of my life. So people say, where did that story come from? Well, that happened to me in this situation, or that happened to me in that situation. And so basically what it was, and it was really funny to have my sister and my mother watch the movie because they knew exactly what I was talking about. I'm doing these things. And they're like, man, you know, and then they even asked me, well, you didn't mention this stuff and this stuff. And it was just really funny. But yeah, that movie was very, very special. And we shot it in 4 days and it was near and dear. We shot 4 days, but we ended up having to shoot an additional half a day because we had some production issues, but it was very, very near and dear. And, I appreciate it even more now, because that was very special and because it was so different than songs. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's why I am definitely championing for you to get this on Amazon someplace, because I feel like songs and Can, like those two have to be out for public consumption, man. I mean, they're different, but they complement one another, like far.
Just so people will know, I mean, if anybody that's interested, you know, the difference between the two, you know, Songs is a film that was produced and financed by a woman by the name of Eki Malik, who is Terrence Malik's wife. And so that film itself is a film that deals mainly with the art of cinema, with basically it's a silent film with music and voiceover. The movie itself is very, very it's being carried by the imagery. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Songs is. Ken is the exact opposite. The movie's carried by dialogue. So that's where the two differences are with that. And so I appreciate what you're sharing, but I need to make sure that, you know, that this is understood. Ken and Songs were grand total cost $8,000.
Wow.
Between both movies. Songs was five, and Ken was three.
And these are features, everyone, just to make it clear.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing about it is that so people say, well, how are you able to do it? There's no formula. We just did it. Did I have a crew? I did not. Who was it? It was me, my wife, and a friend of mine, basically, for Ken. And then for songs, it was me and my wife. And every now and again, there was one day where we did have a little bit of a team. But other than that, that's what it was. And the thing about it is that because it was so personal, the necessity of making this into, we didn't have the money for sound people. We didn't have the money for a cinematographer. So we shot the movie we made the movie inevitable. So we had to make it inevitable. And how do we make it inevitable? Okay, let's focus on the visuals and not necessarily worry about the audio. And we'll just do voiceovers with it. With Ken, the same thing. Hey, we only have these amount of days to shoot with this particular actor. So we only have one day to shoot at this location. So we're going to make it work. And I think the problem is that we look at cinema and we see these almost $1 billion movies that are being produced and made. And we think there's no way in the world we could stand a chance. Well, you actually can, you could stand a chance with an iPhone. An iPhone and a couple of actors. So I just think that what I know now, I believe that I could have shot Ken for even less than $3,000. So, and again, Ken was finished in 2020 during the pandemic. So, that's what we did, So, so that was that those movies are near and dear. And like I said, when you're dealing with money that low, you ain't got to worry about investors coming after you.
you make it work. You make the best of what you get. Because, yes, like you said, the key is getting the story out to the world.
Absolutely.
Right. Absolutely. Birthing it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right on, man. Okay, so in closing, any words of wisdom anything you like to pass along to like anyone who watches movies, who is just curious about, man, can I do this? I don't know. I think I got a camera. Like, I don't know how to do acting. What would you tell that person?
There's a couple of things. I think the first thing is know that you can do it. You just have to be okay with messing up. We are all filmmakers. We are all Major League Baseball players. And not all of us bat 300, meaning that, the best players in baseball right now get it right 30% of the time when they're at bat. The rest of us, we swing and miss. One of the most beautiful things about cinema is that you could tell your story. You could tell your story quickly. You could shoot it with nothing, with no money at all, and people can love it. Or people can hate it, but if people hate it, then it didn't cost you anything. You didn't have to take out loans or any of these things. I think that Steven Soderbergh has really revolutionized things by started shooting movies on iPhones. Mm-hmm. There is a movie, I forgot the filmmaker's name, a movie called Tangerine that was shot on the iPhone.
It was such a
big deal. And it's funny because I watched the movie twice, and at a certain point, like most audience members, you forget that it's shot on an iPhone. You know what I mean? You may see some things about it, but, so what I would say to a person that's interested in film is that you can do it. Don't listen to the business parts of it. Keep it an art and allow the business to search after you. While you're going out there telling your stories and having a good time, if the business comes after you, then fine. Don't wear that coat of desperation that you have to do this and that you have to make it. You can do it. You 100% can do it. I was blessed to have Ken play at the Chinese Theater. That is a big deal. And so for our little $3,000 movie, I think that the other thing that I would say is that film is a, forgive me if I don't give a right description. I want to say this. Film is an interesting oxymoron because you work very hard as a filmmaker. You're trying to craft shots. You're trying to negotiate how you're going to shoot this scene, how you're going to tell this story. You get the actors together. You spend time rehearsing with them. They're ready to perform. You do 10 takes, but you're only using one. you you do all of this stuff. It is simply complicated what film is. That's why I say it's an oxymoron, because it's so complicated with just the hustle and bustle of putting a movie together to shoot a scene for someone to sit down in the theater and watch it, process it in a matter of seconds. It's really interesting, and it's almost unfair, but it's like, that's what it is. You spend, you know, 2 days, 3 days trying to get this scene right, whether it's with rehearsals and shooting and lighting, and then someone sits and watches and says, "Oh, so it was cool." You're like, "Wait a minute, I put everything I had in there." So I think you have, but you have to be okay with, again, watering the ground and being okay with it and loving it. I think one of the things that my wife shares with me is she says, "When you get the shot, when the shot comes right, when you get it, you have a look on your face, and we know that it's over. You got it." And I think that that's so important. Just love what you do, and also be okay with messing up. Mm-hmm. You know, I shot another movie since Ken, and you know, realize that, you know what, hey, this is not the film that needs to be done right now. So, you know, it came out of my pocket. Yeah. Did the movie fail? No one saw it. But then at the same time, it was a situation where, you know, it's okay for us to mess up sometimes. It's okay for us to try to get it right, and not know what we're going to do. And, you know, what better way to learn your craft by doing it with, on small levels, on, with not a lot of money? The one thing that I can sleep peaceful at night about is that every film that I've done, even with Every Morning that you talked about, that was a $500 movie, and it was treated as if we shot it, you know, you know. And so I just feel like, you know, be okay. Make film inevitable. Don't apologize for not having any money. Go out there and tell the story, and, you know, and then you'll be satisfied at the end, because your goal was to tell a story. When I was overseas and I was in the military, all I ever wanted was to have somebody read my dialogue, and I was happy with that. And then that happened, and then we started making more goals. So for people that love cinema, please understand that cinema is not going anywhere. It's changing, but it'll always be here. And just please understand that behind every scene, every movie that's being done, you do have people that are diligently working hard to give you something that is near and dear to their heart. So,
okay. Yeah, and I, for one, appreciate all the stuff that you gave me in form of the stuff I see that's near and dear to your heart. And again, I appreciate you always. Having to, you know, taking time to, you know, tell us a story and let everybody know, you know, your projects. And I'm going to do an update once you get songs and can back up for public consumption. I'm going to do an update because people need to see these two movies.
That's a deal. That's a deal. I'm going to see. You got me all pumped up, man. I'm going to have to start getting to work right now. Figure this out. Okay.
See, okay. See, guys, see, that's the insight on our conversation. See, we talk, then we start getting each other like all hype, like, all right, cool. All right,
we'll do that. You got me all pumped up, man. We're gonna do that now, man. But that's the beautiful thing, man. The beautiful thing is that we build each other up. You know what I mean? And there's no jealousy, there's no issues, there's no problems. We build it, and that's another thing, you know. I don't think I would be, or I know Yusuf, I know that, you know, I can't speak for you, but I can say that I wouldn't be where I'm at without the love and the respect of other filmmakers that are not trying to take what you have, but trying to amplify what you already have. You know what I mean? And I think that's what we do for each other. So there's me, you, you know, Kev, Richard, you know, we always try to, you know, build each other up, you know, so even if we don't talk every day, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah, yeah. You are definitely a very intricate part, you know, of that circle with me. And like I said, that's why I had to have you in the Filmmakers Lounge. And like I said, I appreciate you. Juan Johnson, we cannot wait to see the next masterpiece that you are going to bless the world with. And then, and plus you'll give me an update on songs and can so I can give everybody up there.
No, that's going to happen. That's going to happen.
Yeah. You better have it. Yes, sir. All right, brother. Well, I appreciate you. And this is In-Flight Entertainment's Filmmakers Lounge. Until next episode, wish everybody peace.